The way we're going to work, we're basically going to, everyone's got a sort of a brief presentation, which we'll try to keep as brief as possible. And then, you know, the sooner we can get to your questions, the better off we'll be. I'll confess that we didn't have a whole lot of time to coordinate. We all met about 5 minutes ago. But there are really some wonderful people on the panel, and I'm sure they're going to have dynamic, fantastic presentations. A couple just sort of comments on the topic. This is, I think the topic of this session is mobilizing millions and something about technology and mobile and youth and AIDS. And I think there are a lot of different ideas that I think probably people are interested in, and hopefully we'll get a kind of a different perspectives from different people. I'm probably the only, as I think looking at people, by far the oldest person up here. I'm the least appropriate person to talk about youth, so I'm going to sort of cede that to some of my colleagues. I'm going to do just a brief presentation, give you a couple short videos talking about how mobiles can be used to work on various aspects of combating HIV/AIDS, and then we will have wonderful presentations from my colleagues. So if we can just get the... sort of why we're here, because there are a lot of phones in the world. It's a huge infrastructure that can get leveraged to do a lot of things, to help run programs more effectively, to help keep patients healthy, and as you'll hear a lot about today, to really help engage youth and drive activism and really engage people in this fight. The numbers are just staggering. These are some of the sort of quick highlight numbers. There are 3 million new cell phones in the world every single day. So it's an enormous infrastructure that can be leveraged and is being leveraged in some pretty interesting and creative ways. I'm going to talk quickly about two kind of use cases. One, how mobile phones can be used to help make health systems and health programs work better. And two, how they can be used to support interacting with patients and help keeping people healthy. Just a little bit of Oxiva, a company that I started about 7 years ago. We provide mobile information solutions all over the world. We're based in Washington, although we work primarily all across the emerging markets in about 15 countries, including Mexico. What we do, and this is sort of a universal problem that we think about, whether they're ministries of health or health programs, there are many organizations that have people spread all across the country. And need information. Information tends to flow very slowly back and forth and take a long time. Technology's great, the internet's great, but it's pretty limited. And as you've just seen, with 3.8 billion mobile phones, that's a huge infrastructure that can get leveraged. So what we do are create applications that basically allow for people to use different technologies, not just mobiles, but use SMS, handhelds, phones, computers, to send information into a central system where health authorities or providers or clinicians can actually look at information, make decisions, and then communicate and push information back out to the field. That's sort of a simple way of thinking about the kinds of things that this sort of technology can do. I would talk first about the sort of health system challenge and how mobiles can support. As many of you know, I'm sure many of you work in ministries of health or work with them or around them, they tend to be very distributed, sort of hierarchical organizations, and again, information flow tends to go slowly, step by step. With that infrastructure of mobile phones, one can actually allow for information to go in and out in real time. So rather than waiting weeks, months for information to be available to make decisions, information can go up and down very quickly. I'm going to talk about a quick case study, and I actually will let someone else speak about it because he's got a lot more authority than I do. This system, there's a system called TrackNet, which some of you may know about, that we've implemented in Rwanda for the last almost 4 years, which is used to register all new HIV/AIDS patients, track drug supply, report on key program data, track lab results, and so on and so forth. And about 90% of the health facilities in Rwanda, all of them use it, about 90% use mobile phones as the primary way of interacting with the system. They're using mobile phones out in the field, so at the central level, health authorities are able to look at information, whether it's on shortages of drugs or key program data or track patients over time. So rather than hearing me, I'm going to actually just show a quick clip of President Kagame from Rwanda talking about how this technology has helped Rwanda in managing its HIV/AIDS program. If we can go to the video quickly.
If we took a few examples, for example, in area of health services, We've been working with a company, an American technology company called Voxiva, who have put in place a system we call TrackNet. And this has enabled our healthcare system to be able to have this infrastructure where drug distribution countrywide can be monitored, and where data for patients, and this is mainly working in the AIDS, in the area of AIDS, HIV, AIDS. So we've been able to track the distribution of drugs. We've also been able to access and have data on patients in real time and be able to respond to different needs. This has revolutionized the whole system, which was taking weeks or months to know what is happening in rural areas. And this has certainly changed their lives even in rural areas. And I'm raising this because normally probably is not very clear understanding when people talk about technology or they talk about ICTs. First thing that comes to mind is that maybe this is not required as yet. We need to be worried about health, about education, and so on and so forth. But here, I think the most important thing to note is how these technologies actually make all these things happen and touch and change the lives of ordinary people, even in areas that otherwise were not accessible or information would take very long to reach. And therefore, ICTs have served not only the whole country, but particularly touched those areas that otherwise were not touched.
Okay, here we go. So that gives you a sense of how technology can be used to actually help manage a health program. And that sort of platform and foundation actually is now being scaled up across Africa in a partnership with CDC and the PEPFAR program, the mobile phone industry, the GSM Association, MTN, the biggest mobile operator in Africa. So that's the sort of on the program side. On the sort of patient side or individual person side, mobile phones actually can really be used to help improve adherence, to provide information, and really interact. Again, what I want to show, I'll show another quick clip now. This is actually a program called VitaNet that actually is launching today here in Mexico in partnership with the Carso Health Institute, which is Carlos Slim's Health Foundation, Telcel, the mobile operator, Medica Clinica, and Voxiva, to really offer mobile phone solutions to support initially Mexican living with HIV/AIDS, the use of mobiles to manage their health more effectively. So we can just show the other one, and then we'll move on.
At this moment, there are 40 million people across the world living with HIV/AIDS. 1.6 million of them live in Latin America, 44,000 live in Mexico. There are 3.8 billion new tools that can help. Mobile phones. 3.8 billion in the world, 375 million in Latin America, 63 million in Mexico alone, and millions more each and every day. VitaNet is a free interactive support system that harnesses the power and reach of that mobile phone network to enrich the lives of people living with HIV/AIDS. VitaNet users can subscribe to free information feeds, receiving regular text messages and emails with information on the disease and tips on how to stay healthy. They can also sign up for daily reminder service to help them follow their drug treatment course. Users can track their own adherence and use VitaNet to share information with and engage their family and friends, as well as their doctors. Joining VitaNet is safe and secure, and it's free for anyone in Mexico to use. VitaNet is a countrywide initiative of the Carso Health Institute in partnership with Telcel, the leading Mexican mobile phone provider, Medica Clinica, a network of clinics, and Voxiva, a mobile technology company. Here's how it works. VitaNet is designed primarily to support people living with HIV/AIDS. They are the main users of the system. If they like, they can also choose to extend the system to family and friends, known as buddies, and to their health providers. Everything about VitaNet has been expertly designed with one goal in mind: improve the quality of life for people living with HIV/AIDS. In order to reach as many people as possible, there are a number of ways to register for VidaNet and customize it according to each user's preferences. Registration can be done online through an interactive web form on the CARSO website. For users without internet access, they can register by sending the word register by SMS to 22223 from any Telcel mobile phone. Finally, users can also register through any phone by calling a toll-free number and talking to an operator. By answering a series of simple questions, users can schedule medication or appointment reminders, designate treatment buddies, or even assign themselves to a doctor who will monitor their progress. Once registered, users can choose to subscribe to information services specific to their condition or medication. They will also receive automated appointment reminders, as well as treatment reminders to help improve adherence. They are also surveyed on a regular basis to build a record of adherence. This record can then be viewed and shared through a secure personal data dashboard accessed through the CARSO website. In addition to using it themselves, they can also involve and engage social networks in helping to fight the battle against HIV/AIDS. Let's look at an example. This user customizes his VidaNet system and receives information, reminders, and surveys. He then provides responses to those surveys, building an adherence record which can be monitored by a health provider. If a user misses a few doses in a row, previously designated buddies can be sent automated alerts so that they can provide encouragement and support to stay adherent. By informing users and engaging their networks, VidaNet improves the quality of life for not only the people living with HIV/AIDS, but also for those who treat them and for those who care about them. For users themselves, VidaNet promotes better adherence by involving others, as well as informing them about the disease and their treatment. By making them part of the treatment process, family and friends stop feeling powerless and start getting involved in keeping their loved one healthy. For health providers, VidaNet makes it possible to interact more frequently and more substantively with patients who are better informed about their condition. Also, by establishing a history of treatment, doctors are able to better understand the side effects and ultimately have healthier patients. Finally, for public health organizations, promoting VidaNet means that more people will be adherent, reducing drug resistance, and allowing for a more efficient allocation of resources. This year, the CARSO Health Institute is working with a range of partners in Mexico to offer the VidaNet service to all Mexicans living with HIV/AIDS in 2008. With new partners in new countries, many more people will begin to realize the benefits of VidaNet technology in improving their quality of life.
Just one comment. You do have a tone. If there was a mistake, it's you text VIDA to 22223, and then you can register and start using it. Let me pass over to Jennifer Corriero, who will take it from here.
All right. Well, before I start, I actually want to invite those of you in the room who are wearing a pink T-shirt to please stand up. Come on, don't be shy. Stand up. All right. And, woo, almost tripped. Thank you. And if we can just take note of those people, you can sit down now. We've been working, hundreds of young people from around the world have been working together since the last International AIDS Conference in Toronto to prepare for having a strong presence of youth here in Mexico City. And there's been over 100 organizations collaborating with a coordinating committee of 5 different organizations, taking it global, being part of it. And we've been utilizing a whole range of tools online to be able to collaborate and exchange ideas and come up with different messages that you'll see on the T-shirts. And really what I want to share with you is how the Taking It Global community has been used to really bring greater awareness about HIV/AIDS and to try to strengthen youth networks on the issue. And Joya will follow with the Global Youth Coalition on HIV/AIDS, our key partner. So Taking It Global essentially is a global online social network for young people who want to make a difference in the world. And our mission is inspire, inform, and involve. And we really want to help complete that cycle where people move from wanting to do something or feeling frustrated or angry or alone about something that's wrong with the world, and to try to really bridge those connections between people to create a greater sense of momentum and movement around the actions that young people can take in the world and try to amplify that effect. And the website has launched back in 2000, and now it's available in over 12 languages and growing. And that's something that we've learned that's really important in terms of that theme of reaching millions, is to really provide an opportunity for different languages to emerge and for people to share their experiences and their ideas and their perspectives in their local language. On HIV/AIDS in particular, we have an issue section of our site that is run by our partner, GICA, Global Youth Coalition on HIV/AIDS, and we work to partner with various different international organizations, UN agencies, groups like Oxfam International or ISIC International, and different sections of our site looking at various global issues are run in partnerships with these groups, and we're trying to really be a showcase of content both created by youth, but also content that's very youth-friendly and that's educational to really raise awareness about different international development issues and about how young people can be involved. And the issue pages include not only resources, but different activities, so teachers can come to the site and they can both post and access different classroom-based activities. So if any of you are educators and want to access resources, or if you're aware of resources, you can definitely go to the site and contribute. We facilitate a lot of interactive discussions, and in the whole spirit of the digital age, young people are heavily online, and it's been really important for us to facilitate discussions that really provide different perspectives. And the value of having a really global, globally diverse community is that people are really able to see issues from a different perspective. Just a couple quotes from our discussion forums. One, awareness of the importance of your sexual health needs more emphasis to take care of others and yourself. Ignorance is not an excuse. Two, abstinence cannot be used as a tool to prevent AIDS. Promotion of condoms, safer sex practices, and non-risky sexual behavior and sexual responsibility could be utilized to check the spread of the virus. And so essentially you see that, oh yeah, in some countries talking about sex is taboo. This creates difficulties for young people eager to learn about it, and they end up getting information from the wrong resources. That's Helena from Indonesia. And so you see that people are really able to share their challenges, their concerns, what they're trying to achieve in their local communities, and just be part of a global support network to be able to move forward on things. We worked in partnership with GICA and also UNICEF on World AIDS Day last year to actually run an online live chat. And so you see here we had four people that were participating as guest speakers, and so you could sort of hear their voice and see them interact with their little webcam. And the live chat room hosts up to 100 people online. And we were really able to get a sense of dialogue going and raise awareness about different issues. One of the quotes, there's also a sense from a lot of youth that HIV/AIDS is not something that is going to affect me. And that was really a theme that came up in the live chat. And so having people talk about, well, what strategies can be taken to really create that greater awareness, and so that people can realize that it's an issue that affects all of us and that we all need to be part of the solution. In order to help facilitate people from moving their ideas into realities, we've developed, co-developed a guide to action. And we actually have a generic guide to action on Taking It Global, and have developed different issue-specific guides, one on climate change that we released this year. And this guide to action that's freely available on our site that we launched in Toronto at the International AIDS Conference. And there's a series of stages that people can go through in developing their action projects. And you can also identify different case studies. And that's what we think is so critical. It's not just about, well, what can technology do, but it's about what kind of exchange, what kind of meaningful exchange can take place. And especially young people who haven't had the experience of developing their own projects before, they have the ideas, they have the passion and the energy. What's really needed is that bridge to other experiences. And of course, what works in one village might not work in an urban center, and so we have all these different contexts. And so to be able to share our challenges and our realities in a way that also comes together in a cohesive way is sort of what we're trying to look at. One of our members from Kenya talks about how she used our guide to action, Krista Bell, who's actually here. I don't know if she's in the room, but she's at the conference. I was just at, chatting with her earlier this morning. And she says that she was able to help develop the Stay Alive Youth Support Group, SAYSG, which provides a space for youth affected by HIV/AIDS to come together to share their experiences and empowers youth in the fight against HIV/AIDS. And she says that Taking It Global helps her to achieve her goals and has shown her that youth can achieve incredible things. And that just positive reinforcement and positive motivation is exactly what we're about. And we also have an example from one of our members, Delroy, who's in the Commonwealth of Dominica. And he said, I was browsing on the TIG website, and I saw an activity related to HIV/AIDS in my country. I didn't even know about it. I immediately got involved. Afterwards, we organized several camps in rural areas to raise awareness about HIV/AIDS. By providing information about something that was happening locally in Dominica, TIG assisted me not only in getting involved in that one initiative, but also in spreading my own activities within my country. And so you see that people are using our platform and our community not just to take it global and to go internationally, but also to get more connected in their own countries and in their own communities. And so it's really that tension between acting locally, thinking globally, and also thinking locally and acting globally. And that exchange is really important. As another resource for educators, we created a special thematic classroom on our website called TIG Express HIV/AIDS. And there's a huge emphasis on the power of images, whether that be through photography or through creating art. And so we've run and developed different activities, and there was actually an exchange between Canadian students and South African students, posted their images online, open up an online global collection, and feature these different works at places like the International AIDS Conference, but also traveling exhibits. Throughout schools and community centers to try to get people to think about things differently. Another way of using digital media that has been extremely valuable for us is through film. And for those of you who haven't seen the Youth Force film website, you can check it out and download clips from the last International AIDS Conference in Toronto. And we're actually working on creating short video clips here. And rather than create a sort of a DVD at the end of it all, we're just going to put up digital shorts on the website, and I encourage you to all check it out. It'll be posted on the youth website for the conference, so you can link to it from the main conference website. And that's youthaids2008.org if you want to check it out. We'll be posting also photos, and if any of you are creating your own media, I actually at the airport last night met Ryan, who's 18, from Canada, and he's here creating a film, he's creating a documentary, and it's just so powerful to see young people utilizing and being so resourceful and utilizing simple tools like a basic video camera or purchasing their own major equipment and documenting the experiences and stories of what's happening around the world and how people have great courage and are creating change with their vision and imagination and hope. And so we really want to promote the value of youth-produced media. And we're grateful for Nokia, who actually supported us with these incredible phones that we're using here at the conference that allow us to capture video, photos, and, of course, text each other and keep informed. And so really creating opportunities to empower youth through the creation and dissemination of media is an important strategy that we like to emphasize. So with that, I'd like to introduce Joya from GICA.
Hello. My name is Joya, and I'm the co-founder and the program director of the Global Youth Coalition on HIV/AIDS. As Jen mentioned, we're a strategic partner, and we use Taking It Global's platform to network a global group of 4,500 young people in 150 countries working on various aspects of the HIV/AIDS pandemic. GICA started in 2004 at the Bangkok International AIDS Conference when about 400 young people there recognized that there are many national, regional youth-led initiatives that really lack formal learning opportunities and ways to connect both with each other in their own communities, but also with relevant information, training opportunities, funding, scholarships, and just a space where they can dialogue about the challenges that they're facing in their work and about techniques that they use that are successful and can be adapted to other cultural contexts. GICA's mission is to empower young people with the knowledge, skills, resources, and opportunities that they need to be successful agents of change in their communities. We use basic online social networking to connect young people with mentors, NGOs, UN agencies, public officials, and most importantly, their peers who have much to teach them about working effectively. Although young people lack sometimes the expertise and credibility of adult-led initiatives, we find that they're often able to come up with very innovative and relevant approaches, and they're able to work very efficiently and energetically on these topics. We began our network with an e-consultation that served as a needs assessment to make sure that what we were going to do was really going to be effective for young people based on their own realities in their countries. We started with 400 young people, and we used an e-group on Taking It Global to determine what were the priorities of young people working on HIV and also the social drivers that put young people at risk. We're based in New York and in Ghana. This was an idea that came out of the e-consultation to have a north-south dialogue. We have 5 staff, and we elect every 1 year 12 regional focal points who are based in different regions of the world, and they are connected with local organizations that are working on sexual reproductive health and HIV and AIDS. They then use our global directory of members and organizations to find young people in countries in their region, and they form a regional team that implements activities at the local level. They also work on political advocacy, which can be in the form of events, conferences, or reporting on how well governments are doing in our National Youth Shadow Reports, which we produce every year, on commitments to young people, such as the UNGAS Declaration of Commitment on HIV/AIDS. Some of the things that we offer online, we offer free monthly e-courses, and I'll show you the site in just a minute, but it's using Taking It Global's TIG Ed platform, which is a global classroom that allows you to have students from all over the world using very interactive tools to learn from each other about how to effectively run projects, how to conduct political advocacy and start a campaign in their country, and how to write an effective grant proposal and fundraise. We use e-groups to connect young people together to share information and opportunities, but also to strategize. So, for example, our South Asia regional group right now, you may know that in India, 12 states have banned sex education in schools. And so young people are using that network, even if they're in very different parts of the country, to mobilize around making sure that sex education, comprehensive sex education, is reinstated in schools. You can see here, this is our global directory. It's using Taking It Global's platform, and so that when anybody signs up, they can sign up in the 12 languages of Taking It Global, and it's very easy, and their profile will pop up into our directory, which is searchable by country, by region, and by name. And so we often use this about once a week when we get requests from UN agencies or NGOs if they're looking for a specific kind of young person who may be working on gender or harm reduction or sex work, anything like that. And so we really use this very actively to connect young people to resources that are appropriate for them. This is the online classroom that I was talking about. We have a facilitator who runs a free course once a month, and we get about 150 applications for each course. And so we know that there's really big demand for these courses. We just completed an online membership evaluation survey of 400 of our members, and this was really one of the most useful things that we provide, because young people really don't have access to these opportunities to learn about how to run a project, yet so many people have started these grassroots initiatives. This is a project that we're working on with UNICEF and Taking It Global. It's called iAIDS, and it's an interactive, collaborative website. It's a collaboration of leading youth organizations in the field and UNICEF, which is the largest leading child rights protection agency in the world. We built this site because we recognize that although there are many sites that have information and resources available to youth, oftentimes they're directed by adults and they're not really speaking to young people in the language that we use or in the technology that we use. And so it's based on sort of a wiki technology. The idea is that you can post on so, for example, how to run a successful peer education program. You can post my story of living with HIV, how I was diagnosed, or post reports or resources and information in whichever language you may be working in. And this is also all connected on the back end with Taking It Global's platform. And we've helped other groups working on various aspects of the HIV/AIDS pandemic to use Taking It Global's technology, which is free and available for anyone, to really build the capacity of their organizations. So, for example, the new youth harm reduction network called Youth Rise started using TIG's project pages to build their website, and now they have something similar where they can identify young people working on harm reduction substance use issues around the world. Another one that's just had this built in is Hope's Voice International, which is a network of young people living with HIV, and you can come check out their posters in the Youth Pavilion area in the Youth Living with HIV Networking Lounge. Just to conclude, I think that probably during the question and answer session, you'll be wondering, how do we connect to young people who don't have internet access, who are really the ones who are at most at risk for HIV infection and are the ones who are burdened by the effects of HIV/AIDS? We try to replicate the e-courses and training programs that we have on the ground at the local level. And so our national and regional focal points and e-course graduates will oftentimes replicate a training in person. It could be a project management training. It could be an event for World AIDS Day. It could be a networking session for other young leaders working on HIV and AIDS. But we are able to use this free technology to really support their initiatives by creating, for example, a World AIDS Day local organizing kit, which we use to have 144 events in 36 countries on the same day. And this type of networking would really not have been possible just even 5-6 years ago. I think that the proliferation of internet has really just surpassed my expectations from when I helped co-found the network in 2004, because we're seeing young people connecting together in ways that we really hadn't anticipated before. One more thing about the iAIDS site is that it's going to be launching on World AIDS Day this year, and it's going to have a mobile phone feature that will help young people who don't have internet access to connect both to information and to have their questions answered and their stories posted on the site. So the idea is that they can text message into the site, and they get a free callback, I believe, and they can ask their question or have their question answered. It'll be in several languages. And then they can leave a message that will show up as an MP3 file on the site. And so they're not marginalized from this online community as well. All right, I'd like to conclude there. Thank you.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much. My name is Tembi, and I'm from South Africa. I was diagnosed with HIV when I was 16. At the age of 19, I kept an audio diary. My story was broadcast around the world, and my story has been used in schools in South Africa and in other community projects. I would like to share with you my personal story, and this is how the diary begins. Testing, 1, 2, 1, 2. Test, test, test. Okay. Hi, this is Tembi. It's time for my prayer. Every morning when I wake up, I run off to my drawer, take out the mirror, and look at myself. I say, hello, HIV, you trespasser. We are in my body. We have to obey the rules. We have to respect me. And if you don't hurt me, I won't hurt you. If you mind your business, I'll mind mine. Then I'll give you a ticket when your time comes. I never thought I would ever worry about HIV and AIDS. It was the last thing in my mind.
Well, just like everyone else, I was 16, I was naive, and HIV and AIDS was the last thing that I could think of. I started to think that I might be infected when my previous boyfriend at that time has gotten sick, and no one would tell me about it. So I felt like it was my responsibility to find out for myself, and that's when I went for an HIV test, and I tested HIV positive. And now I'd like us to listen to one of my clips of when I went to see the doctor.
Okay, right now I'm at the doctor's office. Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm feeling great.
You're feeling great, no
yeah.
problem.
I'm fine, no problem.
Okay, let me just take your weight.
I've known that I'm HIV positive for 2 years.
Fine.
I'm considered stage 4. Only on stage 4, you are not HIV positive anymore. They say you've got AIDS.
I see your CD4 count. You know what it is, huh? CD4 is an indication of how good your immune system still is.
Yes, I know.
It was 167 in March of this year.
Yes.
Yes. You know it's going down all the time.
Yes.
Yeah? And when you are below 200, it's dangerous for you.
Yes, I know. I was very surprised to know that my CD4 count was below 200, it was 167, and at the same time, I've never been sick.
You were very much at risk of getting sick. It's a bit like swimming in a lake where you have crocodiles. Yeah? You can swim sometime without getting bitten, but if you stay swimming a long time, at some point, you're gonna get bitten.
Okay, I understand.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm sure. Thank you.
After I went to see the doctor, as we all heard that he said my CD4 count was 167, he advised me to start on taking ARVs, and I was in denial. I refused to start on ARVs because I felt healthy and I looked healthy, so I didn't see how I could actually put up with that responsibility of taking pills every day, and I started to get sick.
Testing 1 2 1 2. This is Tembi again. It's been a few months since I've been talking to you. The reason that I didn't record was that I didn't want to hear my sick voice. I didn't want people to see me like this and hear me like this. I couldn't even look in the mirror. The way that I looked, my face was sort of becoming bones, you see? And I was shaking. I couldn't walk. All the things that were happening, I thought they would never happen to me. Then my mother showed up. When she came into the house, she kind of stared at me. Then she said, "Tana Montenunje," and that means, "My child, why are you like this?" I just looked into her eyes. She was very afraid. And I just look at her and I said, "I don't think I'm going to live for long." And she said, "Okay, don't worry, I'm going to take you to the hospital." Then she put me on her back and she took me to the hospital.
Well, lucky for me, at that point, I was in a community where they started to roll out on ARVs. I was lucky because Khayelitsha is the first community, especially in Cape Town, where there's the highest rate of HIV that actually has the clinic where you can have access and you can get your medication for free. And I decided to actually accept, and because of the support that I got from my family, finally I realized that I needed to take on ARVs so that I can feel much better. Also, because of the stigma in my community, it was very hard for me to actually start to take on ARVs while I was healthy, because I didn't see the reason why I could, because everywhere I go, I could hear how people were talking about ARVs. People were saying that if I will start on ARVs, if I miss them one day, I will die. Or is there a big responsibility, I have to take them every day at the same time for the rest of my life. And some people even say that they are not a cure, they're just a big responsibility. So because of the stigma and also how people were talking bad about ARVs, I just didn't want to take them. So I'd like to take us to another clip of how my community really reacts.
Molo. And now here's my friend. Great, right? See you later, yeah? Bye-bye. Nezola is one of my friends. She lives nearby. She was diagnosed HIV positive in 1999. She has two daughters. There are a lot of us here in Kaisha who are sick, but the people don't disclose because they are scared of discrimination. People do talk, do point, people do whisper. And sometimes if they hear that someone is HIV, they burn your house down so that you can't stay there anymore. In the past, our parents were suffering from apartheid. They wanted to be free. And now it is the same with HIV and AIDS. This is the new struggle.
As I've talked about the stigma that is around my community, also being HIV positive, being an HIV positive woman, it comes with the stigma to also have children. So I'm also a woman, I believe, and I'm also a human being. And I see as if there's no problem with me to want to have a baby. So it was a struggle for me to have my baby, Onwabo, who is HIV negative, because of all the negativity that I got from the community towards my status. So I would like to take you to...
I have to tell you something now that will come to you as a surprise. My boyfriend Milka and I have a baby. This is Onwabo. She's almost 1 year old. She's got many toys. And this one is her favorite. It makes a sound like this. I know what people might be thinking, but Onwabo is fine. We gave a drug called AZT when I was in labor. She's been tested, and she's HIV negative. Isn't that true, Onwabo? She says, yes, it's true. I didn't want people to know that I was pregnant. What I thought was I didn't have the right to have a baby. I thought maybe if I had a baby, maybe in hospital they are going to arrest me. Sometimes I think maybe it was not the right thing to do. But I just wanted it so bad.
Thank you very much, and it's been an honor to be here in Mexico and also to be part of this panel. And my life and my health is very well now. I'm more confident, and I feel very happy about speaking out. Speaking out for me really works, and I would encourage everyone that is there to have an HIV test and to have their, and to know their status. And this is how the story of my diary ends.
I'm just imagining what this world would be like without me. I'm not scared of dying, but I'm scared of not being here, leaving my baby behind. I just want enough time to see her grow a little bigger.
You are awake now.
AIDS is not going to bring me down. I am the one who's got hands and feet and mind, and it's only something that is inside my blood. So it will try to rule maybe inside, but outside I'll be the boss. I want to study further, I want to have a great job. There are a lot of things that I want to get done. I'm just going on with my life. I'm just going on with my life.
Thank you. And to listen to the whole story, you can log into www.aids.com. Thank you very much.
Just one quick note. Lourdes will be speaking in Spanish, so if you want to put on your headphones, if you want, there will be simultaneous translation. I don't know if it's possible to get some headphones for the panel, but some people would like them.
Bueno, muy buenas tardes con todos. Mi nombre es Lourdes Chara, tengo 19 años y estoy muy contenta de poder formar parte de esta mesa. Y también quisiera agradecer a Fuerza Joven por haberme permitido participar en un evento tan grande como este. Yo les voy a contar un poco acerca del proyecto Punto J. Es un proyecto en el que involucra a jóvenes, adolescentes, TICs en respuesta a la epidemia del VIH-SIDA en nuestra región, que es América Latina y el Caribe. Este proyecto, que ya tiene como 2 años y va en su segunda fase, fue creada y ejecutada por el Instituto de Educación y Salud, IES, y es financiada por el ICA y el IDRC de Canadá, que es el Instituto para la Conectividad de las Américas, y el IDRC, que es el Centro de Investigación para el Desarrollo de Canadá. Muy bien. No me sale. El mundo, la región de América Latina no está excluida. Nosotros también tenemos el VIH en nuestro país, en Perú y en otros países vecinos, ¿no? Por ejemplo, en el Perú, en América Latina, hay 1,6 millones de personas que están viviendo con el VIH-SIDA y que dentro de ellos también hay una gran cantidad de jóvenes que tienen este virus, ¿no? No avanza. Vamos a ver América Latina. En nuestra región tenemos varios países que están con este virus, ¿no? Por ejemplo, en el Caribe, el país más afectado es República Dominicana, ¿no? Que está en el segundo lugar. Y este país es altamente joven, porque el 36% de su población lo es, ¿no? Y la mayor cantidad de infecciones que se presentan en este país también se dan en jóvenes. No avanza. Ya, bueno. Otro de los países de América Latina también se encuentra en nuestro país, que es el Perú. En el Perú, desde que se vio el primer caso de VIH hasta del SIDA hasta este tiempo, la mayor prevalencia se ha dado en jóvenes de 25 a 29 años y si sacamos la cuenta quiere decir que ellos se han infectado. Bien, mejor. Se han infectado a los 15, 19 años. Otro de los países que también presenta esta prevalencia es México. México ocupa el tercer lugar en toda América, ¿no? Y Argentina, que ha reportado 8.000 nuevos casos de VIH-SIDA, ¿no? Esta situación nos ha dado a reflexionar qué es lo que está pasando, ¿no? ¿Qué está pasando con la estrategia, ¿no? Para el 2015, ONUCIDA aproxima que 1,5 millones de nuevas infecciones se van a dar en jóvenes y los más afectados van a ser jóvenes que vienen de zonas pobres, ¿no? Y es cierto, lo común que tienen todos estos países son que la gran parte de los jóvenes que están infectados son aquellos que vienen de zonas pobres, ¿no? Ahora, viendo este resultado, cómo está la situación del VIH-SIDA, nos ponemos a reflexionar qué otras estrategias o qué otras formas se pueden hacer para poder llevar la información y la educación a más jóvenes y poder prevenir el VIH-SIDA, ¿no? Es por eso que en esta investigación que se hizo, que hicimos nosotros, los mismos jóvenes desde la institución también con los adultos, se vio la importancia de las tecnologías de información y comunicación, las TICs, ¿no? A nivel mundial hay una gran cantidad de usuarios que hacen uso de estas tecnologías, ¿no? Y la mayor cantidad de estas personas son jóvenes. Por ejemplo, en esta sala casi todos tenemos Messenger o correos y también teléfonos móviles, ¿no? Entonces las tecnologías se han convertido de alguna forma en un medio de socialización en el que nos podemos comunicar con otras personas y esta persona puede estar, digamos, en África y nosotros desde Perú nos podemos comunicar, ¿no? Sin necesidad de poder viajar, ¿no? Entonces hay una gran facilidad de poder llegar a otras personas, ¿no? Y como se dice, como dice nuestra presentación de esta mesa, podemos llegar a millones. Ahora, viendo este resultado del gran uso de las TIC por parte de los jóvenes y la situación de la epidemia que está atacando, tiene un rostro joven cada vez más, nace esta estrategia del punto J, ¿no? El punto J que tiene sus enfoques, ¿no? Que son 4 y que de alguna forma engloban todo nuestro trabajo, ¿no? Que nos acompañan en el trabajo que vamos haciendo. Tenemos 3 ejes que acompañan nuestra estrategia. Está un equipo que lleva todo el proceso, que es adultos y jóvenes, que están conformados por adultos profesionales y jóvenes, que de un trabajo en alianza con otros jóvenes voluntarios llevan a cabo todo este proyecto para poder llevar información y educar a otros jóvenes que tienen entre 15 a 25 años de edad, ¿no? Mediante el uso del Internet. Ahora, yo quisiera compartir con ustedes un video para que puedan conocer de cerca de qué trata en realidad Punto J, ¿no? Todos los chicos que van a aparecer en el video son chicos que han estado participando, que vienen participando en el proyecto aún, ¿no? Y quería hacer una reflexión antes de pasar de que esto va a ser un ejemplo del trabajo en alianza que venimos realizando adultos y jóvenes, ¿no? Y, sí, bueno, estas son algunas fotos de los jóvenes en los trabajos que venimos haciendo, ¿no? Campañas y todo, porque nosotros hacemos la difusión del portal a los demás chicos, si bien es cierto, virtual, pero también física. Ahí. Disfruten del video.
Solo así es como nosotros nos empoderamos y cómo podemos nosotros defender y hacer respetar nuestros derechos como derechos humanos que son.
Sí, lo vamos a... creo que ya estaba terminando. Bien. Ya, bien. Entonces, en este video les vamos a mostrar cómo es la estrategia del Punto J, qué es lo que hacemos los jóvenes, cuál es nuestro rol, qué nivel de participación tenemos, y se va a demostrar la alianza adulto-joven que sí es posible.
Tenemos que consolidar nuestro aval con el Ministerio de Salud para tener más credibilidad frente a las instituciones.
Y continuando, ¿no? Mientras coloco en el video, les hablaba sobre los enfoques que de alguna forma guían nuestro trabajo, ¿no? Estos enfoques son el desarrollo humano, los derechos humanos, la participación activa de los jóvenes, que es la participación y el empoderamiento, y la promoción de sexualidades saludables, ¿no? Y en realidad no lo vemos tan solo que los jóvenes vayan a ir a un lugar y promuevan algo, sino que también estamos muy enfocados en que nosotros mismos podamos desarrollarnos íntegramente, porque somos, al fin y al cabo, nosotros quienes vamos a tomar las decisiones luego, ¿no? Y si nosotros no estamos seguros de lo que estamos haciendo, no vamos a poder generar cambios en otros jóvenes, ¿no? En otras personas. Creo que ahora sí podemos ver el video. Sí.
J es el portal de jóvenes para jóvenes que busca la sexualidad y prevención de VIH.
Punto J es el intercambio de experiencias y de conocimientos y el trabajo en conjunto entre adultos y jóvenes.
Punto J para mí me ayuda a ayudarme.
Jóvenes que ayudamos e informamos a los mismos jóvenes.
Punto J para mí es diversidad e información.
Un lugar donde puedo dar mis opiniones y la respetan.
Para mí Punto J es información con diversión.
Punto J es amor al activismo, que es nuestro trabajo.
¿Quiénes somos?
Punto J. Punto J.
El editorial es el punto de vista de los J sobre el tema de la actualización que se va a colgar. Zámpate es el espacio más visitado por los jóvenes. Aquí los chicos y chicas nos envían sus dudas con respecto a su sexualidad y a la prevención del VIH-Sida. La fotonovela es creada y producida por nosotros mismos y es también una de las secciones más visitadas por los jóvenes. En el Dateando la información se da en porcentajes, es decir, datos puntuales. Aquí en Rómpete el Ojo les presentamos infografías muy interesantes y dinámicas. En el espacio Ellos y Ellas se cuelan las entrevistas que hacemos en la calle. Así les presentamos cómo piensan chicos y chicas con respecto al tema que se va a colgar.
Mi nombre es Evelyn, me dicen Evi, soy promotora juvenil en temas relacionados a la salud sexual y salud reproductiva, enfocándome más a la prevención de VIH-Sida. Es una sección donde nos escriben mandando sus comentarios, sus consultas, dudas.
Hola, soy Lisa. Tengo una duda. Mira, yo tomé la pastilla de emergencia el Postinor 2 hace una semana.
Hola, Melissa.
Los talleres se hacen para que los jóvenes, nosotros, los voluntarios, podamos saber un poquito más acerca de los temas y para que estos temas sean colgados luego a la página.
Nosotros hacemos estos talleres de la forma más participativa, lúdica y vivaz posible.
Son dos promotores los que dirigen la dinámica. En este caso fue Tavis y yo.
Hacemos juegos, hacemos dinámicas, pero hacemos incidencia en darles los contenidos.
Luego de eso ya se sensibiliza con un CD interactivo o un video.
Y incidimos nosotros en VIH y SIDA porque es uno de los temas fuertes de nuestra página web, ¿no? Nosotros hablamos sobre sexualidad y prevención de VIH y SIDA. Y abarcamos, como deben haber visto en algunas partes, otros temas paralelos, ¿no? Lo que es homofobia, lo que es machismo, todo se entrecruza.
Bueno, mi nombre es Justin y soy voluntario del Punto J. Los ilustradores del Punto J recibimos capacitación constante en programas de diseño. Ahora estamos recibiendo clases de diseño web y pronto vamos a aprender a subir nosotros mismos la información del portal. Para poder facilitar más nuestras notas informativas, hemos aprendido a usar herramientas de búsqueda de internet. Con eso ofrecemos mejor información a otros jóvenes.
Yo soy Rina Paredes, soy la comunicadora del proyecto Punto J.
Vamos a revisar alguna de estas cosas, ¿no? ¿Tienen todos ideas equivocadas sobre el uso del condón?
San Juan de Lurigancho es uno de los distritos más grandes aquí en Lima y tiene una población joven muy alta. Lo que se hace es ir, juntar a un grupo de chicos, trabajamos con chicos de quinto y secundaria que son más o menos de 15, 16 años y junto con los voluntarios, ellos guían todo el proceso de cómo tú visitas la página web, les explicas en qué consiste cada una de las secciones y mostrarles cómo utilizar las herramientas que se encuentran dentro del portal para poder acceder a información u orientación en línea.
Yo soy Tavis Montes y he tenido el gusto de ser promotor juvenil aquí con los chicos de Punto J. Hay que empezar potenciando un cambio social y cultural, empezando desde los colegios. Nosotros tenemos que darles a entender a los chicos que ellos son sujetos de derecho y esta información sobre los derechos sexuales y los derechos productivos que la hagan suya, que la hagan propia. Solo así es como nosotros nos empoderamos y cómo podemos nosotros defender y hacer respetar nuestros derechos como derechos humanos. Tenemos que consolidar su aval al Ministerio de Salud para tener más credibilidad frente a las instituciones a las que queremos ingresar en este colegio instituto. Hemos logrado ya la edición final ya de un CD interactivo que viene con los manuales que va a apoyar a que la estrategia sea replicada. Hemos logrado un grupo de voluntarios que está empoderado en el discurso. Punto J tiene un primer gran logro, que es en sí la página. El portal Punto J, que está hecho por jóvenes para jóvenes. Ese es nuestro primer gran logro.
Bueno, como vimos el video, describe de alguna forma todo el trabajo que los jóvenes estamos haciendo, y no solo desde Perú, porque lo que más nos alegra es que hay 6 países que están replicando la estrategia y adaptándola en sus propios, desde sus propios lugares, ¿no? Adaptándola a la realidad que ellos tienen, ¿no? Y lo que más, por ejemplo, de todo el trabajo que nosotros realizamos, podemos resaltar que toda la información que se transmite en este portal es generada por nosotros mismos, ¿no? Nosotros hacemos los textos, editamos, investigamos y también lo hacemos mediante otras tecnologías, utilizando la fotografía, los videos y próximamente vamos a hacer los cortometrajes, ¿no? Bien. Y de aquí de alguna forma les mostramos algunos resultados que hemos tenido. Hemos recibido la visita de más de 127 países en los 2 años que ya está colgada la página web, ¿no? Y este portal, como les decía, está siendo adaptado por 6 países, de los que están México, con la Secretaría de Educación de Jalisco, y que ya tiene grandes avances, República Dominicana con el JIP, Ecuador con el SECAFEC, Argentina con Fundación Huésped, y Perú, hay 2 países también que ya están en proceso, que es Colombia y Bolivia, y ellos de verdad tienen grandes ya avances y muchos de ellos van a lanzar dentro de un mes sus portales. Pero estos portales no van a estar divididos por, digamos, por sus países. Ha nacido una estrategia, ha salido una idea muy interesante de parte de los 7 países que estamos reunidos en poder juntar estos portales en un gran portal que va a ser el portal LAC, que es a finales de este año se va a lanzar y que va a congregar todos los portales de estos 7 países para que las personas que ingresen puedan acceder a cualquiera de ellos, no los jóvenes también. Después de toda experiencia, les mostramos aquí la imagen que va a haber una conectividad entre todos estos países, nos vamos a estar comunicando, ¿no? Y para concluir, creemos nosotros que en realidad esta conectividad ayuda mucho a los jóvenes porque podemos encontrar oportunidades para desarrollarnos nosotros mismos y que las tecnologías facilitan mucho porque con esas tecnologías podemos llegar a millones y a millones de jóvenes, ¿no? En realidad, este proyecto nos ha ayudado un montón a muchos de nosotros, nos ha ayudado a fijarnos profesionalmente, como es el caso mío. Estoy estudiando comunicaciones y muchos de nosotros que también estudiamos carreras parecidas u otras como Derecho, Psicología, vamos a ligar mucho porque estamos apuntando hacia el desarrollo de nuestro país y de todas las personas, ¿no? Yo termino invitándoles a ustedes que si buscan información, .j es su mejor opción. Y el portal LAC muy pronto va a salir y puedan revisar los otros portales que... Lo común es que los jóvenes como nosotros estamos iniciando estas actividades, ¿no? Y terminar de que los jóvenes sí podemos hacer en realidad la acción universal ya porque los jóvenes somos compromiso, somos pasión y sobre todo fuerza. Gracias.
Just one quick correction. Tembi's website is actually www.aidsdiary.org is the correct website. So.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Trina Dasgupta. I'm a new media consultant from New York, currently living in South Africa working with Love Life, which is the largest youth HIV prevention NGO in South Africa. You've heard about some really amazing ways to use technology to address the epidemic today. I'd like to tell you a little bit about something we're doing in South Africa, specifically using cell phones, but specifically looking at prevention from the lens of social determinants of HIV. As soon as the slide changes. Sorry, guys. All right, so in South Africa, where we are is that young people have gotten the message about HIV prevention. It's not that they don't know how to use a condom or aren't using condoms. What's driving the epidemic is not their response to the message, but their response to their circumstances. Continued perception of limited day-to-day opportunity, whether it's social, educational, economic, this is the core of what's fueling the epidemic in South Africa. Many of the young people that I talk to, they'll say to me, you know, if the next day looks the same as the last, AIDS is really not the top of mind for them. Jobs are top of mind for them. Education is top of mind for them. Safety is top of mind for them. And in fact, half the lifetime risk, the entire lifetime risk of a young woman contracting HIV happens just 5 years after she leaves school, because that's when she leaves her safety bubble, and that's when all these additional pressures come in, whether it's to have a child, to bring in money, get a sugar daddy, whether it's, you know, to just get a little bit of money to put some food on the table. So this is the moment in time and the things that we're addressing through this program. What Love Life has done to address these social determinants is to create the Make Your Move campaign. There are 3 core pieces of the Make Your Move campaign. The first is to help young people develop personal initiative. The second is to help them better navigate their day-to-day pressures and challenges. And the third is to help them create links to opportunity, and that's what we're going to talk a lot about today. Just quickly about Love Life. Love Life has a core network of 6,000 peer educators. They're called Groundbreakers and Mbintjis. They go into 3,700 schools, 150 community-based NGOs, and 350 government clinics, and in turn reach 500,000 young people every month with direct face-to-face interaction. So when we think about the media platforms and the technology that can support this type of physical network, we really need to think about the network that exists and what it looks like. As you can see from this map, there's quite the footprint in South Africa that Love Life has. So when we were thinking about mobile, the question was, how do we leverage the footprint to complement it and to integrate it into this campaign? You've heard a lot about mobile, and South Africa in particular, a very interesting market. Over 75% of young South Africans own cell phones. You have full penetration, 98% coverage. And there's often this idea that only young people with money or in the urban areas have cell phones. That's also not true. 71% in informal settlements and 67% in rural areas have cell phones as well. And 60% of all young people say they're using their phone every day, whether they're SMSing, texting, chatting, whatever it may be. We've talked a little bit about internet access. In South Africa, it's incredibly low. It's 6% of the entire country has access to the internet via computers. However, mobile internet access via WAP, which is essentially just a website with your phone, is one of the highest in the world. In fact, it's the fourth highest in the world in South Africa. And at the moment, you have 60% access in terms of WAP-enabled phones. But by 2010, when the World Cup is coming to South Africa, you will see full WAP penetration because the private sector is basically putting all the soccer scores on websites, and who's not going to want that, basically? And then we thought about social networking. So why social networking in terms of the project, which we'll show you now? What social networking does, and it's interesting because we've talked about it a lot on this panel, is it plays directly into the three key triggers to behavior change: a sense of identity, a sense of belonging, and a sense of purpose. Creating a profile is an inherent exercise in identity. There's the whole voyeurism aspect where suddenly you're placing things on a profile that other people are going to see. So you really have to think about who you are and how you want people to see you. Belonging comes through the groups and the chats and some of the things we saw through Punta Jota about coming together with like-minded individuals. And this particular mobile-based social network was created with a sense of purpose. So we've created Mimsta. It's a play on the Make Your Move campaign. Got a little character that we've created to go with it. It's the world's first cell phone-based social network that's dedicated to youth empowerment and HIV prevention. Its primary goal is creating links to opportunity, and it's very much so designed to complement Love Life's face-to-face network, because as we know, nothing can take the place of direct face-to-face interaction, particularly in terms of peer education. And something that was incredibly important, because airtime is so hard to come by and so expensive, is to make it an incredibly inexpensive tool. In a perfect world, it would be free, but we couldn't. And South Africa has one of the lowest data rates in the world. Whereas 2 megabytes of data in America could cost you $40, 2 megabytes of data in South Africa only cost you 2 rand. So we made the site really, really simple and clean so that it costs you less than 2 to 5 cents in rand, which is absolutely literally nothing in dollars. In order to use and peruse it. Fortunately, we don't have internet access, so I can't show you a live demo. I'm going to go through this really quickly and then just focus on a few specific things. So you log on, you get a basic log-on page, a registration page. The reason for the registration data is that we are collecting data to analyze what's happening. The first thing you see is a page that's called the What You Up To page, and that's your status. We wanted young people to think about what they were doing to, quote-unquote, make their move, and if they said they were just sitting on their couch doing nothing, then all the other young people would know that they were sitting on their couch and doing nothing. So we used the physical network of peer educators to get them thinking about this. The main menu I'll show you more in a second, and I'll show you the profile. If you can't quite see it here, but you'll notice that the terms are in various forms of South African slang. You know, South Africa is a very diverse community, so you couldn't just use one language or not another, but the most important thing was it was youth voice and youth speak. So Tomis is taken from Tomas, which is an Afrikaans word. It's very much so what folks are saying. Majimbo is Ringazon. Tembi can help me out with how to pronounce these, because I know I'm saying it wrong. But these come from Zulu and Sotho slang. The kids are all saying, so that was important for us to incorporate. The profile, which I'll show you more about in a second, goes into not just, you know, what's my favorite song, but things we wanted kids to think about. Where do you want to be in your life? What are your interests? What are your talents? Again, that exercise in identity we were talking about. You can keep a diary to share your story. We have calendars where we put in Love Life events, but young people can share their events that they're doing to help with organizing tools. Up Your Game is a section where we share knowledge. But the entire program is built on a points-based system because we know that young people need incentives. It's the reality of where we are. So if you read the article, you take the quiz, you get points, and then all the points get accumulated for you to win prizes, which we've partnered with corporations and music labels to make those prizes happen. So for example, the main prize for last month was a day with DJ Euphonic, who, if anyone's from South Africa, is a huge DJ in South Africa. You get to find out how he made his move. We'll do an article in Uncut, which is Love Life magazine, radio shows, et cetera, et cetera. A core piece of all of this is the Hook It Up database. This is where young people can find about bursaries, scholarships, learnerships, volunteer opportunities, and jobs in their local area. We didn't want young people thinking that they needed to move to Johannesburg or to move to Cape Town in order to make their move and see a better life for themselves. So when you click on any one of these, it shows you what's available in your particular province. If you want to see things in other provinces, that's fine. You'll also notice there's a View Wanted section, which we're working with corporations to link young people to again, to create opportunities and to address that perception of opportunity issue. What's Hot's a lot of fun stuff. We give hard news, gossip, reviews, points, those sort of things. We have some free downloads, but again, it's just for fun, and we keep the file sizes really small. And then we'll go into how you get invited. So here's just a couple of the screenshots. You see how you log in, the main menu page. This is the Chomi's Invite Friends page. You'll see everybody's status. One of the things I wanted to highlight is that everyone starts off with two friends. The first is Mimster, who's this character that we've created, who's there to help you with whatever you need. And the second is Ms. B, who is Love Life's known sexual health counselor. Those two inboxes are supported by Love Life's call center, which already receives 350,000 calls a month. But now those trained counselors and staff are on their well, we have a web management tool that they're using, but are responding to young people on their phone in real time in a way that they can trust each other because they don't have to say anything out loud. So we have a staff that supports this and is responding back to them. You can see some of the status. I also wanted to show you what one of the invitations look like. You can put in someone's cell phone number, and then if they're not on the network yet, they'll get an SMS inviting them to the network. If they are, you'll get a message that looks like this. If you'll notice, you have to view their profile in order to confirm them as a friend. Again, this is to address the very real security issues when it comes to technology and open platforms. There are also the ability to block senders or block members as well as report members. Now, blocking members is sort of like the guy down the hall keeps, you know, messaging you. You don't really want to talk to him, so you can block him and you won't communicate with him anymore. Reporting a user is a much more serious offense, and if someone is reported 3 times, they're automatically kicked off the network. We're able to monitor all of this on the back end. We're checking it daily to see what's going on to ensure that it stays as a safe and a positive space. I'm not showing you this to just show you a picture of myself. I just wanted to show you the profile and also how the points work. So as you see, you get points for doing a quiz, points for participating in the forums, points for the friends, and also a little bit more about what are the types of things we're asking young people in their profiles. Then the next thing is the forums. It's been fascinating to see how young people and a peer-to-peer network support each other through this network. So this young woman is a virgin. She's 16. She feels really upset about it. As you'll notice, it's all happening on her phone. She's using, you know, what as we call SMS speak to do it. And then people in the network are coming back and supporting her. So it's not about sort of that top-down network, but rather young people coming together to say, you know what, you should be proud to be a virgin. And you should, this one guy says, you know, I'm 24 and I'm a virgin. You know, you have to do what's right for you. So again, it's young people coming together. The next piece shows you a little bit more about what the jobs and bursaries database looks like. Obviously, you can't share a ton of information on a cell phone, so we give the basics. We have a rule, no websites, because no one can access websites. Cell phone numbers, mailing addresses, again, supported by the call center and Love Life's Y centers that they have around the country that I showed you, where we share even further information about the opportunities that we can't share through this tool. And then just quickly, a fun tool that we have on here, it's what we call the Dream Calculator. And it's to get young people thinking about their future and how they can save, but more importantly, that things can be different. So for example, if you want a TV, it only costs you 2,000 rand and you want it by Christmas, it'll quickly tell you you only have to actually save 14 rand a day, which is really less than $2. So when you're going through that exercise in your head, you know, do I take a sugar daddy, do I do this, do I do that, or actually, it's really just 14 rand a day. And then what the tool also does is it gives you a recalculation plan and it allows you to create a savings plan. So one of the options says, well, what if you quit smoking? Well, if you quit smoking, you wouldn't have to save any more money a day because you'd be saving 24 rand extra a day and you could have the TV by Christmas. No problem at all. So again, just little things to get young people thinking. These are just some quick photos from our launch events. This photo, I think, is pretty iconic for South Africa because this is what you see a lot of, is even if it's just one person in an area with cell phones, there's always kids around them sort of sharing that communal experience together. Just quickly, we just launched on June 20th, so we have some early data. We've had half a million pages of activity in the first few weeks, which has been really interesting. We're approaching 6,000 registered users, around 100-150 a day, but the depth of the engagement has been really interesting because they're on 6 to 12 minutes a day. 50-50 gender split, which was surprising. We expected to be more female skewed. We've hit all of the provinces, which is something we worked really hard to, because often things in South Africa get caught in Gauteng and the Western Cape, where Johannesburg and Cape Town are. We've reached all the languages. English is prevalent, but shortly thereafter is Sotho, Zulu, and Afrikaans. Just some quick press. In terms of trajectory, we haven't been running extensive amounts of advertising and media just yet. With no media and press, no marketing alone, we anticipated 30,000 by the end of the year. We are going to start running TV and radio PSAs very soon, and thus are anticipating about 200,000 users by the end of the year. And what happens when you reach a critical mass is that's when that exponential growth starts to happen with a viral tool like a social network, particularly on your cell phone. So we're hoping in the next year and a half, to have about a million users. And just finally to show you, this is just the beginning. We have a three-step plan for what we're doing with this network. The next phase is the careers map. So if anyone's ever taken one of those exercises where you learn what type of personality do I have, what type of thinker am I, what would be the best careers for me, this entire thing is being digitized for mobile so that young people can do that on their cell phones, find out more about who they are, but then most importantly, get linked to each other and get linked to jobs. So if it comes out that perhaps you should be an architect, then you will immediately be sent in your inbox, which is the core of all of this, a message when an opportunity for an architectural opportunity will be sent. If you're a thinker, you'll be connected to other thinkers in the groups, et cetera, et cetera. And so this is just the beginning of what we're doing, and I will leave it at that. Back to Paul.
Great, thank you. That's very cool. We have about 15 minutes left for questions and answers, so why don't I suggest if people have questions, they go to the mics. Maybe so we get efficient, hopefully we'll get one question to start. Assuming there's more than one, maybe we'll take a couple, and then you can either direct your questions to one of the people on the panel or in general. So is there anyone that has a question? Oh, great, in the back microphone there.
Thank you very much. My name is Mbabazi Jackson. I come from Uganda. This goes to GYCA. GYCA seems to be a global, like you're saying here. And in Uganda, we have self-coordinating entity for young people, where all organizations that deal and work with young people, as well as mobilizing young people from the grassroots that is happening today and is being strengthened. I have not heard about GYCA in Uganda, and I'm wondering, since this one is an entity that is mobilizing all the different organizations that work with young people, as well as the young people themselves, how do you plan to strengthen such networks in the different, since you are global? Then the other one goes to South Africa. That's Love Life. I'm also wondering, how do you monitor the behavior change amongst these young people using this methodology that you have? Thank you.
Why don't we take two more questions, but if we can keep them brief, that way we can have more time for more people.
Hi, my name is Caitlin. I'm from Canada. I'm a media producer. I don't really have a question, but I just wanted to add on how efficient this type of media can be. We've produced AIDS prevention program in 41 different languages that we hand out free to broadcasters, NGOs, hospitals. And because it is based, use a condom, stop the spread of AIDS, so far we haven't been able to get on in China. However, we did upload it onto the media on our website as well as YouTube, and somebody got it in Mandarin in China, and we now know that it's been passed around to 4 million cell phones. We didn't have access to their broadcasters, but through the media, they were able to distribute it themselves, and 4 million people have seen it. So it just to say it does work, it's important. I also have copies of the work here if anybody's interested. It's free. And I just want to congratulate you guys. Thanks.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Scott from the United States. Thank you to all the presenters. It's a wonderful panel. My question is for Trina. I'm really excited about what you just presented about MINSTA. I'm curious because you mentioned that the program is designed around talking about social determinants of HIV infection. Does the site, I don't know if I'm using the right language, have targeted arenas where participants can talk about stigma, racism, sexism, homophobia, or actually really directly address that, even though I do understand how, you know, motivating people to claim opportunities does address it obliquely, but it'd be interesting to know more.
Do you want to, Joya, go first, and then Trina?
Okay. For the young man from Uganda, we actually had an event 1 month ago in Uganda, and our regional focal point, Stephen Kasoma from Kampala, is here at the conference, so I hope you'll speak to him. But what we do is we have local events so that people who don't have internet access and those who do can find out about the network and the resources that we offer. It is very difficult on very small resources, both financial and human, to have an active presence in all of the 150 countries where we have members, but we rely on these type of events. Before the one in Uganda, there was one in Kenya, in Nairobi, and that's a way so that we can link up all these disparate youth initiatives, some working on gender, some working on employment, some working on labor, and find the common thread and build a common advocacy or project implementation strategy in their city or in their country. And so the regional focal points, their primary task is to map, to find out what are the other organizations in my country, what are the initiatives and what are the priorities for this region that we really need to take on.
Hello? In response to the question about monitoring and evaluation, as I mentioned in the beginning, MINSTA is part of a much larger Love Life program, which is has a very large monitoring and evaluation component. So it is one aspect of this entire social determinant strategy that is going through a research project, which there will be a study that comes out of that as well. But in addition, AMFAR actually just recently put out a request for proposal about researching how cell phones and social network can address HIV. And I don't know if Audrey Pettifor is here, but we are working to specifically do research on how this particular tool can work. That said, you know, we're sort of at the beginning of all of this. I often say it's like the internet in 1997, where we're kind of figuring it out. So we at Love Life felt like it was really important to get out there and to do something and to start experiencing it. The research is happening, but it was important to do something and to see what was happening rather than just to wait for what the private sector is doing, which often isn't of the most positive nature. And so we wanted to create a positive space for young people, and then we're doing the evaluation as we go along. In terms of the question about stigma, HIV, and all of that, there's very much so that content in there. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to show you all the different aspects in the product. I ask you to please check it out on your own when you're able to. But the articles often speak about HIV-related issues, stigma issues. There's multiple categories of forums. So there's a relationship forum, a politics forum, an education forum, an employment forum. So within that, we see many of those issues coming up. We're also speaking with Hope's Voice International that Gaika mentioned earlier, or Joya mentioned earlier, to make sure that their ambassadors are featured in our network. We have a section called Movers and Shakers, which provide role models. So then we want to make sure that people living with HIV are those role models and then are seen as movers and shakers. And then we have what we call moderated group chats, where our content producer speaks with people. Often it's an entrepreneur or a person living with HIV, it's a multitude of different types of people. And then they're able to get connected to people that they otherwise wouldn't be able to via their cell phone.
Take a couple more questions.
Hey everyone, my name is Lisa and I'm coming from Canada. I just wanted to ask a question for the whole panel on, what advice do you guys have for other peer education networks and how they can adapt these tools? What best practices you found and also what challenges? And also, when do you know when you need to reinvent the wheel? Because I find that there's all these new social networks that are popping up, so how do you know, how can we kind of like share what's already been done so we're not replicating things that already exist and help make it more effective? So,
I mean, I can just start by saying that we didn't want to invent our own tool. It didn't make sense for an NGO to create their own technology-based tool, you know, rather partner with a technology partner or partner with an existing mobile social network. But what we found was we had a really tough time getting exactly what we were looking for because we were in sort of a new space. So I think in general it's important to do a baseline assessment and to say, what exists out there? How am I able to adapt it to my own needs? And then if you're not able to do it, then see what you can do. But often if you get that, I mean, I know Paul will tell you, he and I have spoken before, Voxiva is immensely helpful to so many organizations with their tools and you know, taking it global as well. So I think it's important to see what's out there. And then if it doesn't work, see what you have to do. But I think there's a lot of stuff out there as well.
Another couple questions?
Yeah, hi, my name's Ryan, and I'm also from Canada.
What's it with all the Canadians?
Yeah.
What have you done, Jen? You've seated the audience with too many Canadians. Last Canadian question.
Yeah, last one. This question is directed at Joya and Jennifer. I was wondering, do you think that with the increased use of the internet, people are going to start getting hungry for more personal connections? Or do you think that the use of the internet is just beginning and that it's going to grow more and more over the next 10 years?
In three words or less, you can answer that question. Why don't we sort of respond to those couple questions?
Okay. Well, on that question, my personal take on it is that it will increase the desire for people to personally connect, and I see that having connected with so many people online through Taking It Global or through other online social networks, that ability to meet someone face-to-face is so much more exciting, and I think that knowing little bits about them or having seen their photos that they posted online or little bits about where they've been, I think it can help trigger greater conversations. At the same time, my friend was talking about how she now refuses to upload her photos onto Facebook when she goes on her trips because her friends don't want to talk to her anymore about what she's done because they're like, oh yeah, I saw that, like it's old news. So I guess it's not inherently bringing people together necessarily. And just the question about reinventing the wheel, Lisa, just one comment on that, because we launched, for example, Taking It Global back in 2000, and the types of tools that exist keep evolving, and as a not-for-profit organization, it is very difficult and challenging to keep up, not just with the for-profit tools that are out there, but also with our own imagination and with all the things that we'd love to be able to do. And definitely the spirit of collaboration is really key, I think, to be able to address it. And I have a few ideas of how to collaborate with people here on the panel. And I think it's a good point on how you collaborate. And then even on the Taking It Global site, we're integrating, you know, YouTube videos. We can't host the kind of footage that YouTube can host, so we'll just embed it or even post it on Blip or other sites, and or whether it be photos on Flickr, we'll embed them or other profiles. So we are trying to strike that balance between having our own network and building our own tools as well as integrating with what's out there on the web, and that's sort of part of, I think, the whole Web 2.0 movement. Anything else?
And I think that what we're doing is quite different than things that are prevalent in the global north, such as Facebook or Second Life, because we have such a high prevalence of internet connectivity in the global north that you will find young people online all the time, and they're just overly saturated. But in most of the countries where we work, and about 80% of GICA's membership resides in the developing world, people are not online that often, and they would actually never have the opportunity to connect to people in other countries if it were not for the internet. And so, for example, just to put the youth force together for this conference, we would have meetings, e-conferences, with people in about 20 different countries, Chile, Amsterdam, China, India, everywhere, and we'd be chatting and drawing on a whiteboard and speaking into a microphone all at the same time, and this really wouldn't have been possible even just 1 year ago. We're using Google Docs for everything from volunteer schedules to editing fact sheets with 20 people. And so all of these tools, we're not really inventing them ourselves, but we're really using them as a platform to accomplish what we want to do, be it advocacy or, you know, creating a new program or getting funding for adolescent reproductive health. For the question on challenges, I think that one of our biggest challenges is language. Internet connectivity and language, because in some of the areas that are most affected, there are both language barriers and internet issues. So, for example, East Asia and Eastern Europe, we have somewhat weak networks because it's very hard to kind of dialogue between all the various languages that exist and to really reach young people that are not internet connected or marginalized. Another challenge, I think, for youth initiatives is just finding sustainable resources to keep going. As Jennifer mentioned, as not-for-profit organizations, there's so much that we would really love to accomplish, but we're constrained. But I think that as youth-led organizations, we've just got this innovation and access to so many different kinds of ideas and different kind of platforms that we're using to really make all of this come together and happen.
I think just if I can echo a couple of points. I mean, I think a number of people, Jen and Trina, have said it. There's so much technology out there right now. It's really more about thinking about how to creatively apply. There are some new things. I think some of the stuff that LoveLife's doing is really pretty cutting edge, exciting stuff. And there aren't a lot of existing other people doing that. Forget about HIV/AIDS in general doing that kind of thing. So, but you know, for so many things, I mean, if you look at what Taking the Global has done, I mean, that platform, you're crazy if you want to build your own version of that because you can just use it. And I just, you know, I would caution, there are probably not many engineers in this room, which is a good thing. Don't listen to your IT people. IT people always want to build everything. Usually you don't need to. And so, you know, just thinking about it, there's so many tools out there. It's so much easier now to do a lot of the stuff than it used to be. So just, you know, ask really hard questions about, are you sure there's no way, nothing I can use to do this before you start trying to, you know, develop stuff from scratch in general. One last question, and I think we're over time.
Terrific. My name is Miguel Gomez, hello, Canada, Washington, D.C., in the States. For our panelists, one of the things that we're really proud in the States doing is something the Kaiser Family Foundation does, which is called Know It, where you can text your zip code to Know It and find out where you can find a free HIV testing site in 20 seconds on your cell phone. But also, I was wondering if you are using texting to actually provide basic answers to questions like, last night I had sex with someone and the condom broke, what do I do? Or I found out I'm HIV positive, what do I do? And I was wondering if you're using mobile applications to answer those kind of basic questions.
I can say quickly, Joy and I have actually spoken about this at length, and what Kaiser done is amazing, but the CDC has an existing wonderful database of the clinics that exist in order for that to happen. So it's often a database issue. We tried to do that very same project in India and were completely unsuccessful because there wasn't a database of all the clinics in the country. So if someone did text in where they were, we didn't know what to tell them. Similarly, in South Africa, you can do that. There's a program called Cell Life that does really great work with SMS-based technologies. The National AIDS Helpline does do SMS-based questioning. We obviously at LoveLife do it through the website. We're also building an SMS version specifically for questions through the call center. So there's a lot of that, but you also have to look at what the market looks like. And SMS in South Africa is far too expensive for most young people to send. It's like 50 to 70 cents in Rand. So they'd much rather use GPRS, which costs them next to nothing. So yes, SMS stuff is great, but I think it's very much so market-dependent and database-dependent.
That's a very important point. It really, the billing is entirely different in different countries. In Mexico, GPRS is very expensive, SMS is a lot cheaper. So depending on which country you're in, the relative technology. But the one other point about this Q&A is you need someone to answer those questions. And so I think one of the other things that you should think a lot about is technology by itself doesn't do anything, but if you marry technology with human networks, that's what's powerful. So, you know, I mean, I think LoveLife is doing that because they have a call center, they can have people actually answer those questions. Here, the work we're doing with Instituto Carso, there's a group called Medical Home, which is the biggest health call center in Mexico, looking at integrating with their human beings to actually sit behind some of these electronic systems. So technology by itself won't do everything, but merging it with human beings is a good thing to do.
Great. And thanks for mentioning how important open source is. That was terrific. Thank you all.
We just want to actually conclude on one point, which is for those of you in the room who consider yourself allies to young people, there's actually a youth adult commitments desk at the Youth Pavilion in the Global Village, and we really want to encourage you all to go. I mean, anyone is welcome to make a commitment to youth, both young people and adults, and so we just want to invite you all to go there as an action step. Thanks.